Many years ago, I took an elevator to the top of the Willis Tower, formerly known as the Sears Tower. It's a 108-story skyscraper in Chicago, Illinois. You add another 280 feet because it has twin tower antennas that go up for a total of 1,730 feet tall. For about 25 years, it was the tallest building in the world, taller than the World Trade Center towers in New York City that went down in 2001. Well, the construction on the Willis Tower started in 1970, was completed in 73. It took 2,000 workers those 3 years to build this tall structure. Now, near the top of the tower, there are observation decks, glass observation decks. And I had an opportunity. I was in Chicago on business some years ago. Hey, I'm staying nearby. I'll just go up and take a look. And I went up the towers, and you can't go up with one elevator. You have to take a series of elevators to get up because no one elevator goes that tall. And so going to the top, and I looked down at the fifth tallest building in the world, the John Hancock Center. And when you're looking way down at the fifth tallest building in the world, you know you're up there. And that's when they tell you, oh, by the way, this tower has 6 feet of sway from one side to the other, although you can't feel it. But Chicago's known as the Windy City. It's just an uncomfortable thought that you could just go whiplashing off some way or another. Well, the title of today's message is High Places Prophecy. High Places Prophecy. Now, I've been to a few other places. You may have, too. I was at the Tokyo City Hall. It's 42 stories high. So is the new Ohtani Hotel. In fact, there is no building in Tokyo that goes over 42 stories high. That's the maximum they allow them to build because any taller than that would create a problem for earthquakes. So they put these tall buildings on a set of roller bearings in each direction so that in the event of an earthquake, the building is like it's floating and it isn't going to crumble the building. But of course, you have all the utilities. You have the gas, the water, the sewage, the electricity. They're put on flexible couplers so it can shift and still not disturb the utilities to the building. And so that's, and when they tell you about these things, when you're at the top of the building, it isn't always the most comforting thought. But you can see a long way. In Japan, you can see to the horizon. It's 40 miles and it looks like city in every direction. You can see Mount Fuji, Fujiyama, as they call it. The snow-capped volcanic peak. And so there are these tall places around the world, and mankind seems it's always been in awe of high things and majestic views. In Genesis 1, or Genesis 11, the first four verses, I'm not going to turn there, you know the story, about how mankind focused on building the city, and in that city, the Tower of Babel. And they wanted to build one that reached to the heavens, as it were, to displace God. And so they had this majestic thought of going to building a high place. And of course, God scattered them around the earth for his purpose. Their time was not then. I know that many years later, the Greeks built a treasury, a building on the top of the highest hill in Athens called the Acropolis. Top of the hill. Fancy building, was used as a treasury, and any invader would have to get up that hill to raid them. It was that's where the treasure is kept, and it was a temple of the goddess Athena. So they kind of worshipped in that direction, the high places. I'd like to turn now to Ezekiel 6, and take a look at a prophecy with regard to high places and where people place their expectations, trust, or hope, and what God thought about mankind's decisions for these decisions. So in Ezekiel 6, starting in verse 1, and we have the prophet Ezekiel reading, "Now the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face toward the mountains of Israel and prophesy against them." The mountains, of course, are a type of government of Israel. Take a look at that. And if we read on in verse 3, What does it come to? It says, I will bring a sword against you, and I will destroy your high places. So God did not obviously speak kindly about the high places through the prophet Ezekiel. If we move on down to verse 6, he explains what will happen is that your idols may be broken and made to cease, that and your works abolished. God was very disappointed in Israel in that they allowed these high places that he wanted to have torn down. And if we read on in the book of Ezekiel, we go to Ezekiel 43 in verse 7. If we turn now down to Ezekiel 43, Ezekiel prophesied even more. In Ezekiel 43, verse 7, he said to me, Son of man, this is the place of my throne and the place of the soles of my feet, and where I will dwell in the midst of the children of Israel forever. No more shall the children of Israel defile my holy name, nor their kings by their harlotry or the carcasses of their kings on their high places. The decision makers place themselves or their thoughts onto high places, as it were. Well, what are these high places that we're talking about? And of course, we've all familiar with the history of Israel and Judah and many of their rulers. Some of them were pretty awful. And there were a few good rulers and that stood out on principle. They weren't just being arrogant or conceited or foolish or blaspheming idol worshipers. But most of the kings spent a good portion of their reign trying to reverse the evil that their predecessors had introduced into the kingdom or had allowed it. So you have this series of bad kings or bad rulers and good rulers and so forth. And even the good rulers, of course, like all people, needed help. But the good rulers introduced reforms. They smashed idols. They slew false priests. They renovated the temple and they reintroduced true worship. So they were doing the best that they could. And there were 39 rulers in Israel and Judah after the time of Solomon. Only 8 of them reform or return to the truths of God, and they were all from Judah of those 39 rulers. And in the book of 1 and 2 Kings, those 8 kings were described as, quote, doing what is right in the eyes of the Lord. So not too many. And of course, if we look at the world around us, there aren't a lot of people that are doing what is right in the eyes of the Lord. And so, of course, even those kings had failures because we've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. So even those kings didn't manage to get rid of the worship centers of false worship of all of the high places. Well, when the children of Israel came out of Egypt and they went to the promised land, the land of Canaan, what were they told? They were told to utterly destroy all of the high places that the nations where they were going to dispossess. And it says that they were to destroy their altars, break down the pillars, burn the wooden images, cut down the carved images of their gods. Because that's not how we worship God. That's not how we show that. And we can read that in Deuteronomy 12, verses 2 through 4. But instead of what? Instead of obeying that command, what did the Israelites do? Is they sort of co-opted or adopted some of these high places to make them their own places of worship. You know, it was sort of like an extra thing. Syncretism, I believe we call it now. We just bring in what the Sever Society does and try to somehow baptize it, as it were, and make bad things good, which, of course, we cannot do. And then we have to take a look, what about the high places in our lives? It's easy to point out the high places in the rulers. We can see their faults. There's lots of press, and we can point out what they're doing wrong, because after all, we know the truths of God. We just hold up our Bible and say, you know what? we can see this. We've been shown this. We can shine the light on it. That's what we have. But do we shine the light on our own selves, on our hearts, for the high places that we might have? You know, those places that we climb up to and secretly worship, even though we don't say it out loud, we use as a default mechanism. And even those good kings of Judah had great difficulty in that area. They just didn't get rid of all of it. Well, how much time do we have to get rid of all of it? God has given us an opportunity. And he's given this opportunity here in the next 90 days before Spring Holy Days to be able to search out these high places. Now, sometimes it's really awkward. Other people can always point out our faults a little easier than we can. I'm not suggesting that we go around each one to another and point out the high places in each other's lives. I do not want the scrutiny, and I don't think any of us do. But that then means that we have to be able to do that. We have to look inside to be able to do what those ancient kings did not do as effectively as they could. And in fact, the spiritual high places can be harder to destroy than any physical high place. If you've got a physical high place, well, the Twin Towers in New York, they came down. The same with the Tower of Babel was stopped from being built. And you have many of these structures in history that didn't make it. If you take a look in Luke 12 and verse 34, in Luke 12, 34, we can take a look at the high places in our lives and measure or compare them to the pagan gods in the high places of history, and then ask ourselves, where do we keep our treasure, our personal treasure? In the high places that we think are secret and that are hidden in plain sight, well, the high places that we are tempted to go that are displeasing to God are something that we need to tear down. In Luke 12, verse 34, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. What do we think about when we wake up in the morning? What's our prayer that day? Is it thankfulness for what God has given us, both physically and the spiritual knowledge, even if it's incomplete? Incomplete physical blessings, incomplete spiritual blessings. What is the most important thing? That's where our treasure is. Now, the people in the Empire of Greece stored it in the Parthenon. And what happened eventually? They were attacked and overcome by the Persians and others who raided it, and it came to naught. So we have now 3 months until Spring Holy Days. And if we take a look at Ephesians 6 and verse 12, in Ephesians 6 and verse 12, we can see the challenge that we have before us. I'm going to read this in the King James. In the King James Bible, I think that says it well. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Well, when we go up then to a high building, or perhaps climb a tall mountain, or let's appreciate and to appreciate the majesty of God, but recognize that the high places should be to honor God and not for pagan worship, whether it's physical or spiritual. The high places of our thoughts and our behavior, the places in our hearts, must be turned to God on a daily basis so that we don't get caught up in the mindset of the people who attempted to build the Tower of Babel. Well, we have the help of a loving God against the darkness of this world. And we have God's Spirit to assist us in replenishing the Spirit of God and to help us repulse the spiritual wickedness of the false gods in high places. So the next time you want to climb to a tall place, and I am a little afraid of heights, I will admit. I don't mind climbing a ladder if I can keep one foot on the ground. And I presume some of you are like that as well. Let's consider the high places prophecy and the devastation that is predicted for those who do not tear down those high places.